everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 460. This is the 460th edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully you are out there and having a fantastic week. We're having a pretty interesting one here. I guess you could say we have a lot of fun in store for you, a lot of things that are going to be happening in the next couple days, a lot of things that are going to go beyond the borders of this podcast. For instance, we're heading to another fun little unconference, so that should be interesting to talk about a little bit later on. We have a lot of different topics to discuss here today, so in case you happen to be wondering, the Caffeination Podcast is lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com, in case you couldn't figure it out for yourself. And we have a bunch of fun stuff over there that you can do. For instance, you could subscribe through the Zune, iTunes, RSS feed directly, Stitcher. You can go over to Blueberry and find us there. That's Blueberry. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. We are also a proud Puzzle Piece production. There's a whole ton of stuff that you can do over at the website, including email us, which if you have any comments, feedback, suggestions, or anything else along those lines, please feel free to do so at caffeination@gmail.com. All right, I think that enough of an introduction. You are, of course, listening to the high-octane world of caffeine culture and technology news, so we're going to have a bunch of interesting things in both of those topical areas to talk to you about today. A little bit of a refresher in case this is your first time listening to the Caffeination Podcast. Since we talk about two different topics, and since I can't separate them in my own life, I like to try and divide the show up into two different things. I've never been able to have a late-night coding session fueled by anything other than caffeine. Maybe a little bit of anger, maybe a little bit of jealousy over other projects that are out there, but you know, there's always caffeine in there, no matter what it's tinged with. And of course, my love for geeky gadgets, technology news, shiny things of all kinds, blinking lights, dials, knobs, anything like that. So we separate them into two fun little sections, the first one of which we call Geek Cruft. I've had people tell me that they have never heard the word cruft on another podcast. They've never heard of the word cruft before I say it. I say it a lot. Cruft is a word that originated in MIT. It basically means computer junk. It's things that lay around. I use cruft all over the place, so if you're interested in what it is, you can look it up yourself. I think it's a fun little way to, you know, start your adventure online. So we have the Geek Cruft section up first and personal. It's what I call the meat and or the potatoes of the show, because a lot of people listen to find the fun, interesting, and sometimes a little bit informative stuff that we talk to you about here, right up front and personal on that one. And then at the end, we drop into the food and caffeinated bits. That's a bunch of little interesting tidbits. Sometimes it's recipes, sometimes it's reviews, sometimes it's all about my love of coffee, home roasting, French press, whatever the topic is. If you have a question, please feel free to shoot one off. We do have a couple things in the works that are going to be out in the next couple of days and weeks, including guides on how to choose your very first good coffee and what you can do to make your coffee taste that much better. First of all, I'll give you the tip on that one. The easiest way to make your coffee taste better is use better water. And the best water that's out there, actually, if you're going to buy bottled water, is actually Aquafina. It's made by the fine folks at Coke. And believe it or not, there's an incredible amount of filtration that goes into that, so Aquafina is kind of the way to go. Or you can just have nice filtered water in your house through a pitcher or whatever else you got going for you there. And it's a fun little way to start that off. All right, so we had those two things. And I think we should actually dive into what actually you're here to see. Unfortunately, the live show did not go off as planned tonight. I'm on baby duty again, as per usual, having a three-month-old who's having strange and interesting sleep patterns develop and shift all over the place. I think she's back to having like a 10:30, 11 o'clock feeding, whereas before she would just wake up around like 1 or 2. Now it's like all over the place, so it's kind of crazy. So, but beyond that, we have a lot of really cool stuff to talk to you about. All right, what first thing we have up for you here is, what is Fire Sheep and why should you care? Despite being a really funny sounding thing, the idea behind Fire Sheep is that it is a security hack. It makes things easier to do. And by things, I mean snooping and spoofing different sessions on very popular websites that are out there. The real intent behind Fire Sheep is that it's kind of like throwing a gauntlet down and trying to force some of the more popular social networking sites and big sites out there just in general to really secure their data. So basically, the idea behind any user authentication system is that, you know, you type in your email address and your password to whatever you're trying to log into, happywaddlefeet@hotmail.com, fuzzykittens is your password with the U is actually a Q, and somehow that makes sense to you. Okay, whatever. You have a remotely normal password. It doesn't matter what happens. That goes over secure channel. It goes into Facebook. It says, Facebook says, okay, yes, you are in fact Adele LeClaire, and they gives you back Adele's cookie. And the cookie is a tiny little file that sits on your computer. And like cookies do, you know, they just kind of sit there. Well, actually, cookies in normal life actually get disappeared pretty quick, especially around this house. We all like cookies. And FireSheep likes cookies too. What it does is on an open Wi-Fi network or an open network of any kind, actually snoops out these publicly available cookies that as they're sent back and forth across the ether webs, basically. And as soon as it sees them, it basically spoofs your connection so that if you are running FireSheep, which is as you would probably guess, it's actually an extension for Firefox. And this is, you have a machine which basically can show you all everybody's you know, pictures and stuff that as they're, it basically shows you their session. So you can get the information as they're going into Facebook. You can get information as they're going into Twitter. It works on a whole bunch of different sites, and it's actually kind of putting a lot of scare into people right now. If you're listening to some of the media that's out there saying, this is a horrible hacking tool, how can anybody possibly develop it? What they really need to be saying is that why hasn't Facebook implemented something like HTTPS, which is basically what your bank does. It's a SSL session. It's a secure socket layer. It means that every piece of information from end to end is actually encrypted and encoded so that nobody else can be Adele LeClaire except Adele. Yes, there are other ways of actually obscuring all the security that goes in there, but we've talked about that pretty much at length, and I think we've killed the quote at this point. It doesn't matter if you're using crumbs, it doesn't matter if you're using cookies, it doesn't matter whatever. The enemy does know the system, and the real reason behind FireSheep is basically to kind of force a lot of the sites that are out there to actually using better security practices. This is going to help you, this is going to help me, and it's not going to add a lot of overhead. I mean, to a lot of the other things that are out there. One of the statistics that was put out, you know, Facebook and other people are kind of blanching. They're saying, you know, you're going to force us to add a lot of overhead and add extra systems to our server farm. And if this is a little bit too technical, trust me, this isn't the stuff that we usually delve into. But the idea behind it is that, you know, we really kind of need this security. You need the sites to start taking responsibility for the user data that they're actually mining themselves. Google recently went to all HTTPS on Gmail and all of their services. And they said that less than 1% server load increase over their entire server farm. They added no extra servers. There's no extra front end. There's no extra anything. The only thing they did was enable SSL. They got a verified SSL certificate, which if you have a site that you'd like people to log into, you can get your very own SSL certificate yearly for $40 from GoDaddy. Or you can do it. You know, there's a whole bunch of other different authorities out there. It's an incredibly simple thing to do, and these sites kind of need to really take the reins on this. So that's what FireSheep is, and if you really want to know more about it, you can head on over there. And hey, you can play with it yourself. It's over at codebutler.com/FireSheep. It's getting a lot of press right now, and some of it's right and most of it's wrong. So, all right, moving right along to the next little thing. The funny thing is, before this started coming around, I started hearing a lot about this. I actually had a post in the work over at paulrjmuller.com, which I call the simulacra. It's the it's basically my digital self. It's also the Web Presence Index, which I've talked about a couple different times before. If you're trying to find me, you go over to myname.com, which is paulrjmuller.com or paulrmuller.com, and you have all the different things that I'm involved in, from LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Seismic, Blueberry. The whole list of different things that I've ever been involved in is over there, and you can find my profile, so it's how you know where I am. But beyond that, there's a lot of what I consider scholarly articles. It's things that I've written in my digital travels as I wander around trying to make sense of this entire thing. And this all kept coming back to this privacy thing kept coming back because I kept hearing people say, you know, why are these kids putting these stupid Facebook things up there? Why are people posting stuff on Twitter that they're getting fired for? And then I have, you know, they have the old-timey people in your area saying, well, you know, discretion is the better part of valor. You should really know what you're supposed to be doing in there, out there at all times. Yes and no. And I kind of delve into this a little bit, and I basically say, you know, if your life was as digital as the life of people is right now, when you were in a much more, shall we say, vulnerable state like teenagers are right now, how would it be if every one of your friends from back whenever you went to college was able to post all kinds of crazy pictures? Your digital life is pretty much running the show right now. It used to just be, you know, you had your word, you had your handshake, and you had the look in the person's eye as you were going and you're handing them your resume. Now you've already been searched a couple times at the very least, and any other indiscretions you may have not too carefully hid are posted up there. And now more so than just in the bedroom, but anybody you trust with any information out there, you're also trusting everybody that they trust. So information wants to be free. The entire gist of this little article over there, I'm just putting it out there for your consideration. If you think it's interesting, I'd love to hear your comments on it. But basically, the information wants to be free. So if you don't want something out there, don't share it in a digital realm. So, you know, it might be great that you have funny pictures out there, but as soon as you push them into the system, they're going to find a way to get out. And beyond that, there's a funny little thing from over at laughingsquid.com. It says, a helpful Venn diagram has two, and we all know about Venn diagrams. They're overlapping circular diagrams that say, you know, one thing is funny people, the other thing is people with hats. So some funny people actually wear hats, and those people are usually clowns or hipsters. So it has like a whole different layered thing there. And, you know, depending on how the circles are layered, some of them can be very funny. It says, a helpful Venn diagram about internet privacy. There's a orange circle that says the internet, and there's a green circle that says privacy. They do not overlap. There's a very good reason for that, and I think we've already talked about a couple different things as to why that is here today. So, all right, moving on from privacy and on to some other stuff that's probably going to affect you. If you are an Apple customer, you may be aware that Apple, the new version of OS X, which is OS X Lion, and any version thereafter, is not going to ship with Flash installed. Now, I've been getting into arguments with people for the past couple days about this, and people have basically said to me, says, well, you know, Windows doesn't ship with Flash. Well, you're right, the actual OEM version, you know, the actual from Microsoft version of Windows does not ship with Flash. But Apple has long prided themselves on, you know, you basically turn your computer on, you set it up, and you have the full internet at your disposal. So you have everything available to it, whatever you want to do. Now, as it is, you're going to have to install Flash. You're going to have to install certain plugins. And beyond that, you're also going to have to install Java. Why is that? Because, well, apparently, according to the new updates that are out there, the new things that are happening, Java has been deprecated. If you do not know what deprecated is, it basically means it's been knocked down in priority to the point where it's no longer currently supported. So Java virtual machines and any other Java programming that is done on Mac, you're going to have to find a different way to do what you do. You have been put on notice. So anything after 10.6, which is Snow Leopard, it's going to be anything after 10.6, it's not going to be supported. Anything before that will be supported. This is kind of a double-edged sword because in the first place, there's been a long lag time in actually getting a working Java machine available on OS X. In fact, I think the last version actually took something like 2 years after its PC counterpart actually came out. And that's pretty rough going if you really want to think about it. So the thing that I'm actually a little bit disappointed in is the Flash thing. People are saying that, you know, Apple has no need to keep supporting Flash. I say if you want to put a full version of the internet out there, you should probably put Flash on your machines. And then they're saying, well, you know, Adobe can't do anything to Apple. Well, technically Adobe can, because if you have an Apple product, if you have a Mac, you can actually print to a PDF for free. It comes part of your operating system. It's also available on Linux. Well, Microsoft tried to add in the ability to print directly to a PDF in the last version of Office 2010, and Adobe sued them. and they successfully got it removed, which kind of stinks. So now you have to actually buy Acrobat if you want to be able to print to a PDF, or you could just install OpenOffice, which can do it for free. But beyond that, if Apple's going to start playing hardball, I would love to see Adobe come back and say, yeah, you know all that fun stuff that you like to do, and you have, you know, the print to PDF and you have the save to file. Yeah, it's not going to irritate as many people as the no flash on this is irritating over here, but yeah, you might want to remove that from the next operating system that you put out there. Okay, thanks. This is really getting childish. It's really getting irritating from end to end, and you know, the only people who are going to lose are the consumers. Consumers like flash websites. They like stupid flash games, and the only reason there's a large portion of websites out there that no longer use Flash, besides the fact that, yes, it is a little bit processor intensive, is the fact that Apple no longer supports it. So if you want your site available on via mobile, you can't use Flash. Well, if you want your site available to Android devices, you can. I mean, it's kind of fun to be able to surf certain Flash things on my my phone. But you know what? I just like to have the option. So we spent, you know, basically the last part of the 90s telling everybody, you know, Flash is the way to go. It's going to be an interesting way to design websites. And then now you're telling everybody in the latter half of the 2000s, early 2000s, that, you know, it's, yeah, not so much. All right, moving on to a little bit more geeky news, less hopefully divisive. Square Enix has a new version of Final Fantasy coming out, Final Fantasy XIV Online. They have a lot of people kind of upset about the way that it's actually working. Not only is it shaping to be a poor World of Warcraft competitor in the American market, but it's actually getting really, really bad reviews. So bad that one of the shareholders for Square Enix decided to quit the game, sell all his shares. This wouldn't normally be a problem, except for apparently this person was such a super fan of Final Fantasy that he actually amassed somewhere around $27 million in stock. So yes, he actually owned approximately 1% of a video game company's stock. If he owned 1% of their socks, I don't think that would be very weird. Well, I do think that would be very weird. I just don't think it would be very practical. I mean, because what are you really going to do with all those socks? But stocks, those are a little bit more interesting to hold. So the stock dipped from 1,800 yen to 1,735, and then it stabilized back up at 1,800 again. What does this mean? It doesn't really mean anything long term. It just means that there's one fan who was incredibly upset about the entire thing, and it's kind of interesting to see what, you know, what kind of power it actually has over people. So, all right, we found something really awesome over at DeviantArt.com. The new movie Tron is coming out, and apparently there's all these different crossovers all over the place. Daft Punk has been showing up at pretty much anything that has electronic music in it, but this isn't about that. This is about one of my favorite comic book superheroes / anti-heroes out there. That's Ghost Rider. I follow a gentleman by the handle of Diablo 2003 over on DeviantArt, who's one of the artists that Marvel uses from time to time. And they tagged him for producing 5 separate covers to come over with Tron crossovers. And he actually created a cover for Ghost Rider, all Tronified, as he put it. This is unbelievable. Mark is probably one of the most interesting artists that's out there, Mark Brooks. And he actually made a demon light cycle, and the disc is at the end of the whip for Ghost Rider, if you've ever seen it. So it's just kind of a one-off. I wanted to just share that with the group. Hopefully you enjoy. Next little thing I also found from over at LaughingSquid.com. Sears has launched a zombie shopper's guide website for its undead customers, including some videos about how to keep your zombies all going good in the hood. I thought that was pretty hilarious, so I wanted to share it with the group. We're not going to get into all the different audio and other stuff that's out there. Keeping in line with the spooky tech, the Halloween stuff that's going up there, there's a beautiful, beautiful collection of art that's over at, let me see, it's just called The Stuff, but it's called Of Fur and Felt. It's by an artist, I'm just making sure I have this correct here. I can't remember the person's name, and I can't find it very quickly. But this is basically what would, if you were to take Muppets out of their kid-friendly atmosphere and you were to have put them as monsters that were chronicled by some far-off scientist, say back in the 1800s, you would have the Oscar, the Cookie, and the Animal. And they're kind of macabre representations of what Oscar, Cookie, and Animal actually are. They're very, very grotesque, they're very brutal, they're very beautiful all in this thing, and they actually look like scientific designs and scientific illustrations, and they're actually available for print over at NakatomiInc.com. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly, but if you spend $75, you get all three big prints, plus three handbills that are actually done in kind of a silver metallic ink that actually look like the fake scientists thing. If I had enough place to put them and my son wouldn't have been deathly scared of them, I would definitely buy these. These are gorgeous. I'm going to have to start collecting some art for the basement because there's some pretty awesome stuff over there. All right, also over at NakatomiInc.com, they have a awesome t-shirt that I had to share with the group, basically because I had a VHS cassette that was sitting on my desk the other day, and one of my students, a freshman, came in and said they didn't know what it was. I think they might have just been goofing around, but I can't believe that VHS has gotten so far out of date that they don't even know how it works anymore. Like, I've actually had to tell professors that they have to rewind the tape after they're done, and so be kind, please rewind. So now you can get a t-shirt that says Never Forget 1975 to 2008, and the best part about the t-shirt from Nakatomi Inc. is that it actually comes in a reclaimed VHS clamshell. So if you remember getting videos from the video store in the hard plastic shells, they actually reclaimed about 300 of them, and it's just pretty crazy. They're $25 each, so if you were a huge video fanatic, as my family was, then you might consider getting one of these. Never forget. All right, one of my friends online and a gentleman to meet in person, Mark Schovenfeld, actually posted an awesome thing over at Tumblr. He posted the jet bike, so we directly link over to this. This is called a Pulse Jet Bike Road Racing Bicycle. It has kind of like early 40s styling. It's a beautiful bicycle that this gentleman actually sells. And it's just crazy. The guy who actually writes these, or actually, designs and builds these, is named Robert Maddox. And actually uses a pulse jet engine. The idea behind a pulse jet engine is it's the same jet engine, the same early stage jet engine that was actually used in the V-1 flying bomb, or the buzz bombs from World War II. This is pretty crazy. This jet engine itself was invented around 100 years ago. You can watch all kinds of other fun stuff about it, and it's just beautiful to see the smooth chrome lines, and apparently the bike can go anywhere from 65 to 75 miles an hour traveling down a smooth ride. The only problem is the reason they called it a buzz bomb is that the actual engine works by intermittently firing as the fuel gets intaked through the front, and it creates this very distinct, it's kind of like a pulsing, which is why they call it a pulse jet engine. It's this raucous, loud, nasty sound, but when you're looking at it on a bicycle, it just has all kinds of wind strapped to it. So thanks, Mark, for sharing that. And there's a link over to Mark's website if you want to find more awesome stuff, and he has a whole ton of them. And of course, some of the cool stuff that Mark actually does is some of the music stuff that he has. So he has a blog called Why Vinyl, so you can head on over there and check that out as well. All right, there's a great video that I can't remember who shared it, but I would love to actually have these kind of powers in real life. There's a thing, it's called I Have PSD, which is basically Photoshop disease. It's a stop motion short film by Hyper AKT. Sorry, I'm all over the place today. But it's Hyper AKT, who, what it would be like to wake up and have all kinds of tools at your disposal for fixing things like broken teeth, or finding out exactly what happened last night, or making the world around you a little bit more beautiful. So imagine as you went throughout your day that you were able to actually pull up different menus, brushes, copy, paste, whatever you had to do to get the world around you to be a little bit more in order. So you have Photoshop for real life. This is a if this is not an ad for Photoshop. I don't know what it is, but it's just fantastic. And I agree with a lot of the commenters. If I had the ability to do anything in real life and use any one Photoshop tool, it would probably definitely be the clone tool, just because, you know, you could kind of make a little bit extra coin on the side for that, except for the fact that you have serial numbers and stuff. But hey, you know what? There's no serial numbers on actual coins. All right, moving on to the next and last thing here at the Geekcraft section at the Caffeination Podcast. I will be attending WordCamp Philly. I was requested to attend by some of the people at Temple University, and it's going to be kind of fun. I do not know entirely what we're going to all be talking about. I'm going to be talking a little bit about how WordPress is, you know, a good platform to help manage content and work throughout different things that you can try and do. I'm pretty sure that I can do almost any kind of website out there. I can cruft into a way of using WordPress to handle the data, almost any kind. So hopefully you're going to join us in some of the endeavors that we attempt to do soon. But WordCamp Philly, if you are going to be in the Philadelphia area and you're going to be specifically around Temple University, October 30th, 2010, please feel free to stop by. Drop me a line, caffeination@gmail.com. If you see me walking around, say howdy, whatever. All right, that about wraps it up for the Geekcraft section here at the Caffeination Podcast, diving on into the food and caffeinated bits. We have a collection of espresso martini recipes. Now, as I'm looking through all of them, there seems to be one small problem with every single one of them. They all appear to be creamy. Now, I like creamy martinis, but it lacks a certain something. So I wanted to put these out there because I've had a lot of requests for really good coffee drinks, and I don't entirely know why they're all espresso, but to me, espresso has just a little bit more of a rich flavor than coffee. So if you say that it's coffee-flavored vodka, or if you say that it's espresso-flavored vodka, they pretty much equate to the same thing in my book, because I don't know. I've never seen a great difference in taste between the two, except in the actual beverages themselves. And then you're not just dealing with, okay, this is espresso and this is coffee, and they're both just different ways to extract the oils and the flavor from the beans, but you're also dealing with the fact that the espresso is a little bit thicker, has the crema on the top, and there's a whole bunch of other different stuff in there. So you can head on over there if you'd like to actually check these out. I've had one fantastic espresso martini at the Blue Martini, which actually is pretty much clear, and it was beautiful. So that's just one of the interesting things that we have out there. Another one to file under Spooky Tech: Think Geek has a bunch of awesome geeky pumpkin art templates. So if you are not creative, you can head on over there and check out all the different little pumpkin art they have. They have the companion cube from Portal. They have the Android. They have a whole bunch of, they have a recursive pumpkin, the Red Ring of Death, a Darth Vader one. You can actually have, there's 57 pumpkin templates that they actually have up over there. Rorschach, they have the Borg symbol, 8-bit skull and crossbones. I just brought our pumpkin in for the night, and I need to kind of work on the couple of the designs that we got going for it. I'm not entirely sure what I was going to do. I was originally going to do a Frankenstein pumpkin, but I have something to live up to. Last year I did what I considered to be a fantastic version of Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc., and it kind of started off as a Cyclops and went that direction. The year before I did a little bit, it was pretty shoddy, but it was a Ghost Rider pumpkin, and I kind of liked that. But this year, I'm not sure if we're going Frankenstein or if I might do something a little bit different. So we'll see, but hopefully. I've never really liked doing the geeky pumpkins, because they all, like, true geeky pumpkins are just really kind of simple. And I always buy one really big pumpkin, because I like doing the carving thing. So that's all tomorrow night. So it's going to be the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. All right. By the way, they actually do have a way to turn your pumpkin into Charlie Brown himself. And if you are good at carving pumpkins, or if you just want to see some interesting art, over at DeviantArt.com, the current contest is actually a Halloween carving contest. So I submitted the one from last year, which was actually the Mike Wazowski pumpkin. I like it. Unfortunately, a pumpkin that's truly well done, it's kind of hard to actually see some of the detail. You can either have it lit from behind, or you have the bright flash on, and it kind of ruins the glowing effect. And then today at lunch, I was kind of fiddling around. I had my X-Acto knife, and they said you could pretty much carve whatever you wanted. So I was like, I wonder if I could carve an apple. So I actually carved a giant hole in the center of my apple, and then a couple teeth, and then made my apple eat another apple that I had in my lunchbox. So I said, what big teeth you have? And it looks so funny, it's ended up as my Facebook profile pic. But I've had a lot of really fun comments on that one, so I just wanted to share that with the group. And there's also a link up so you can see all the different pumpkins that are currently up for voting. So if you are a member of DeviantArt, you might want to check that out. They actually just posted a really kind of awesome Iron Man pumpkin, which is kind of like the mask in relief. I thought that's pretty cool. But it's just kind of neat, some of the stuff, and it can give you ideas in case you haven't carved your own pumpkin. So if you are somebody who would like to do a bunch of pumpkin art, then you can head on over there and actually submit your own stuff. There's pretty cool prizes for that one. So all right, then the I think this is the second to last little thing that we got for you here at the Caffeination Podcast today is actually our review of the Urnext Grinds. Now this is a product that was sent to me at no cost. And it was a wonderful little product, and it's kind of it's a different take on how to clean your conical burr grinder. What it basically is it's pellets that are shaped like coffee beans. They're made up of different kinds of cereal particulates, so I'm pretty sure there's probably rice, there's probably wheat, there's probably a whole bunch of different stuff in there. There's no word as to whether or not they're actually gluten-free, but they are kosher, so they don't have meat and dairy in there, so that's pretty cool. But the idea is that you're supposed to throw these in the top of the hopper, run them through, and it's supposed to get all the old stale coffee out, absorb a lot of the coffee oils that are in the actual grinder itself, and then you're supposed to run another batch of coffee through there and then throw it out. Here's the problem that I have with it. I actually don't like wasting coffee at all, and especially you don't want to throw bad coffee down the top. It's not like you can just flush it out with bad coffee, because then you're just putting bad coffee back into your grinder. So what I used is I shifted the way that you're supposed to use them a little bit. I ran them through the machine because I was stunned by exactly how much stuff they really did pull out of the machine. They really did a very, very good job. But the other thing that they did, now, previous way that I had suggested you clean your conical burr grinders was to use rice, to just throw white, plain white rice down in there, and then you would have to do the same thing and flush it out because they absorb the oils. And the most irritating part about actually cleaning your grinders is that it's hard to get the oil residue off stuff. The grinds actually really sopped up a lot of the oil, coated what was left, and the oil would bond to the grinds and the cereal bits before they would actually bond back to the metal. So it made it incredibly easy to actually clean the grinder after the fact. In fact, you know, all I had to do was after I threw the grinds down through it, I could pull the top out and just rinsed it off with water. I didn't even have to scrub it, and it was shining like almost brand new. So that's really cool. Thank you ever so much to the fine folks over at Urnext for actually sending that in. And if you are interested in them, they are roughly $11.95 for three single-use pouches, so depending on how often you use them and depending on how often you clean your grinder. Now, this is supposed to be for burr grinders. This is not supposed to be for blade grinders, because blade grinders are incredibly easy to clean, although I'm pretty sure you could probably use this in the same thing. But there's also a little slideshow of the different pictures that we actually took from actually cleaning it, so you can see what the grinder looked like beforehand, and then you can see what it looked like afterwards. So, all right, that about wraps it up, except for the fact that we have the last little thing that we got for you here. I actually made a mistake. I almost completely disagree with the way this is actually run, but I had to share it anyway. This is the candy hierarchy from over at Boing Boing. They have the top tier, post-tertiary, second tier, third tier, bottom tier, and then so low it doesn't even register on our equipment. The only problem with this is that they put actually Smarties down in the bottom tier. Now, if you're going to rate candy, Sweet Tarts and Smarties need to be up near the top, especially with Skittles. I am much more of a fruit-flavored candy person than I am a chocolate-flavored candy person. This was obviously done by a chocolate-holic because it had Carmelo's, Milky Way, Snickers, Rolos, and Twix up at the top. So obviously there's somebody who's a fan of both caramel and chocolate. And then the second, or the post-tertiary layers, the Hershey Kisses, Peanut M&M's, regular M&M's, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Three Musketeers, and regular old Hershey Bars, and the Reggie Jackson Bar, which I've actually never heard of. I would probably put my top tier would have to be Skittles, and then follow followed up by Smarties and Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and the Peanut Butter M&Ms, not the Peanut M&Ms, okay? I'm just actually curious to see exactly what everybody else thinks of the candy hierarchy, and if you had to build your own, what would you move up one way or down another? I'm just, I like how they did it. It just seems to be lacking a little bit in effort. All right, that about wraps it up here today for the Caffeination Podcast. Thank you ever so much for sticking around. If you're going to be around WordCamp Philly, just drop me a line, caffeination@gmail.com. Hey, if you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, anything else like that, please throw a note in my general direction. You can find this and all the other fun little episodic friends that this episode has over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. This has been the Caffeination Podcast, and I would like to thank you for listening and ask you to please stay caffeinated, people.